Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Be around the world, and thank you for your company once again on truth2u.org. That's truth2u.org. Now, many listeners will know that this is the first time that I've done a Truth To You program since the tragic loss of my firstborn son, Jonah Samuel Jonathan Vandoor, of blessed memory, just 5 months ago. So I'd like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank those of you who contributed to his being laid to rest in the Hebrew section of Doveton Park Cemetery, Ballarat, where he was given an honourable and dignified Jewish burial by the Ballarat Hebrew congregation. Your generosity and prayers have been deeply moving, so thank you, dear listeners. Jonah, my son, visited Israel for his 13th birthday in 2015. He was an avid student of Israeli battles and a proud supporter of the IDF. He himself was a keen army cadet. I don't pretend to even know 2% of the vast knowledge that he had amassed on such topics. I miss him dearly, of course, every day. It's very difficult. And for this reason, it seemed appropriate to return to Truth To You in 2018 with a new guest and someone with whom Jonah was very familiar. Joining me is a fellow Israel News Talk Radio host. His weekly show is entitled Bulletproof. He's also the co-host of a weekly television program on ILTV entitled Israeli Frenemies. He is a sergeant in an IDF Reserve's elite paratroopers unit and the assistant director of Standing Together, an organization that supports IDF soldiers. Welcome to the program for the first time, Ari Fuld.
Hey, John, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on, my friend, and it's good to talk to you again. The last time that we spoke face-to-face was, oddly enough, in Australia. I just returned from Israel on the tour that we do every year, and lo and behold, you were here. We met in Melbourne, and you were giving a talk in regards to Standing Together, and I'd like to get to that a little later on. But first, my friend, could you describe the two shows that I mentioned, starting with Bulletproof on Israel News Talk Radio? What is it about? What is the agenda of Bulletproof?
Sure, I'd be happy to explain to you. First, I want to say hello to all your listeners, and of course, my condolences for your loss. You know, in Judaism, we say that may God, you know, console you with the rest of the people who are mourning in the nation of Israel. May we not know any more sorrow.
Thank you, mate.
So, you know, where do I start? Wow. So, you know, all those listening, hold on to your seats. It's going to be quite a ride.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire news, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
I was born and raised in New York, and I came to Israel in 1991. I drafted to the IDF. I lost my second gunner who was kidnapped and murdered by terrorists. I actually found him. We found the terrorists and arrested them. And throughout the years, I was serving Israel on a physical level. I was obviously deepening my knowledge on the Jewish level. And I, you know, subconsciously saw what was going on around me of this, I would even call it self-dug grave of anti-truth. In other words, people are getting up these emotional ideas based on absolutely nothing, and the narratives are being brought forward by even the Israelis. Forget about, you know, the UN, and just lie on top of lie, inaccuracy on top of inaccuracy. And, you know, I was demonstrating in 1993 when Israel was signing a peace deal with the, you know, father of all terrorists, Yasser Arafat, who was getting the Nobel Peace Prize. At the time, I remember pulling my hair out, goes, what is wrong with the world? A man who threw kids off a third-story window in the north of Israel, a guy who threw a Jewish guy off a boat and Leon Klinghoffer because he was Jewish, this is who we're giving guns to? And I'm thinking, hello, people, the emperor is stark naked. Why do you think he has a beautiful suit on? And it was frustrating me, but I didn't know what to do. So I was just fighting, you know, in the IDF, you know, trying to keep Israel safe and, you know, getting to little debates here and there. And life was just going on. And then several years ago, you know, I started writing like a little diary about my thoughts in the army. About only my enemies would just choose life. They'd have a beautiful life. And one day, some person on, I think it was Facebook, made a comment, and I answered them back, and my answer just went like fire. It just caught on like wildfire. I'm like, wow, people are listening. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was I started writing and I started debating, and I found that there's a tremendous amount of ignorance. And I couldn't decide whether the majority was evil, you know, lying, or the majority was just ignorant. And you know, when you show a picture of a dead baby from the Gaza Strip, and I'm going, well, it's not my fault, I lose, right? Because a dead baby is, you know, that's mm-hmm. emotional. Mm-hmm. And I found that the people from the Israeli side were having a hard time opening their mouths out of our emotions for the dead people, you know, because Jews is known to be compassionate people, and doesn't matter who's dying, you know, we're not happy about death, unlike, you know, our enemies. So what happened was someone gave me a call from Tel Aviv one day and said, hey, Ari, how would you like to be a guest on our show? And I was like, wow, TV, you know, look at me. Right. So I went on the show, and there was a right winger against a left winger, and they were debating and they were screaming at each other. And I politely asked the right winger, do you mind if I take the stage for just 2 minutes? Because, you know, they were both emotionally arguing with each other. Nobody was actually bringing facts. And, you know, I actually studied the facts, not because of school, but I wanted to know. So the right winger said to me, absolutely, for sure. And I turned to the left winger on the show and I said, listen, I got a couple of questions for you. And I laid out some basic questions, to which he started stuttering. He literally swallowed his tongue. Like he had no answers. Mm-hmm. So the ratings of this TV show went through the roof that night, through the roof, which I was like, cool, you know, all right. And then they invited me back 2 weeks later. And the right winger says to me, what, you want the stage again? I said, well, if you don't mind. And she said, okay. And I went another left winger. And again, the same thing happened. And again, I wasn't getting emotional. I wasn't screaming. I'll tell you the 4 points, which I continually go over and over again with these left wingers. And again, the ratings went through the roof. So a week later, I get a call from the TV station and said, how would you like to host the show? And I was like, what? Yeah, what?
Friday morning, we watch Israeli Frenemies. And I have to say, one of the things that I appreciate you the most is your balanced approach. Although there's lots of heated moments and even some shouting back and forth, which yes. certainly makes it interesting, the questions are balanced, they're rational and reasonable. And really, you can tell that there's a fair amount of respect between you and your co-host.
Well, we're friends after the show. The truth of the matter is, I'll let you in on a little secret that nobody knows. After the show, you usually go up to the roof and, you know, maybe have a cigarette and a cup of whiskey.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But the point is, I'll tell you the honest truth is, you know, I have respect for anyone. And that's irrelevant of what religious, you know, religion or race. I don't care. My problem with the left is not that they're left. In other words, if we just had a difference of opinion, you and I, you know, you like blue, I like red, or you know, okay, we can argue and decide. The problem with the left is, while I'm a person who's, you know, serving in the army would take a bullet for this guy, and he's serving in the army might take a bullet for me, his ideology is based on kicking me out of my home. Hmm. So friends, that's very nice, but at the end of the day, he's going to come with the bulldozer.
That's right. Yeah.
And so what I say to the left is, don't make believe that you're like calm and nice and gentle and anti-violence. Your whole ideology is based on violence. Your idea is kicking me out of my home because I'm Jewish. Hmm. And so he says, for the sake of peace. I said, the last person who spoke about kicking Jews out of their homes for the sake of peace was not really a good man. So, you know, that's my balance. So I try to keep civil. But a lot of times when the screaming happens, I say to them, look, guys, I'm not interested. I have facts to back my claims up. I'm not interested in screaming with you. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times they deflect the questions and whatnot. So that was Israeli Frenemies. And I really have a good time. And my goal is not necessarily to convince my, you know, my political enemies, right? It's really frenemies, right? Convince him or change his mind. My goal is to educate the people watching. And we have millions of people watching the show.
That's right. Now, Bulletproof, on the other hand, is you solo. And is it more you presenting current events that are happening in Israel and how they pertain to the left and right politics? Is this more what Bulletproof is?
Well, Bulletproof, again, you know, I got a call from Tamar, you know, the manager of Israel News Talk Radio. Yeah. I said, sure, I'll do a show, no problem. Now, Bulletproof was not my name. I don't do that ever. Bulletproof was actually Tamar's idea.
Right.
But the reason that she chose the name, which was a good reason, was because I told her, when she said to me, what's your show going to be about? I said, I'm so sick and tired of the lack of knowledge and the blatant lies and propaganda against Israel. And I said to her, nobody can fight me. In other words, it's not that I'm so stronger than anyone else, but I'm using facts. And there's no two truths about it. There's one truth. And so, you know, you can touch me, right? I'm obviously not bulletproof, but the claims are solid because I'm not giving you my emotion or my opinions. I'm giving you facts. That's why she said bulletproof. So I said, okay. So bulletproof basically is to, you know, my tagline on the show is discover, expose, and destroy anti-Israel propaganda coming from around the world, including in Israel, unfortunately. For the last month and a half, even 2 months, I literally had to focus inside Israel. You know, I'll give you a perfect example, right? Everyone got upset that UNESCO said that Jerusalem is not, that has no Jewish history to it. Everyone got so furious. I laughed at it, not because I thought it was funny. I said, Israel's upholding a policy that if a Jew goes up on the Temple Mount and prays, the Israeli police arrest them. So what do you want from UNESCO? In other words, of course they're wrong, but, you know, King Solomon, right? King Solomon, two women come in front of King Solomon with a baby. Each one claims it's her baby, right? How does King Solomon decide the court case? He said the woman who does not want to cut the baby in half, that's who the baby belongs to. Yeah. So while Israel's trying to be apologetic and say, well, let's split up the land of Israel, even though we have a national, religious, and historic right to the land, and the Palestinian narrative is a fabricated narrative, we say split it up, and the Arabs say no. So what do you want from the world? You want the world to say, well, it belongs to the Jews, even though they're willing to give it up? It doesn't make any sense. So I have to really pull, you know, to talk about my home base often, unfortunately. But, I you know, I'll finish with this, and then we'll move on. I do believe that it took, in 93, Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres, rest in peace, you know, signed a horrible treaty with Yasser Arafat. Mm-hmm. And the giving up of land is just the tip of the iceberg. The real effect of the Oslo Accords was not the land giving up. It wasn't even the guns given to Yasser Arafat and his brute squad. The real effect of the Oslo Accords, what we really did is we signed a lie. In other words, everything else can be fixed. But the lie that we signed, basically what Rabin and Peres did was we signed a contract in blood saying, you know what, Palestinian narrative, even though we know that you're based on a fabrication of history, let me sign the dotted line and actually, you know, put like a kosher sign. Let me give you credence for
that. That's a really good way to put it, to put a kosher sign on that. Now, you mentioned narratives and anti-truth. You mentioned, is it just ignorance or is it just anti-Semitism? But I want to go back a little bit further than where you are in history. Can you explain, for those who really don't understand the situation, would you be able to simplify it? Because, you know, sometimes people talk about, they say, you know, there never was a Palestinian people, but then they say, but Israel was known as Palestine. Oh, but it was Jewish. Now, can you just bring us back in history and simplify this for us?
Sure. Okay. So let's just get the facts, okay? In the Bible, in the Torah, in the Tanakh, in the full Bible, the Philistines are mentioned, okay? Now, the Philistines themselves were sea people. Off the Gaza Strip from Greece, they were sea people. The Hebrew name Plishti, Pileshet in Hebrew, means intruder. That's the word, Pileshet, Liflosh, means to intrude. So they were sea people who intruded the land of Israel, okay? Now, that was the story of Samson who destroyed the Plishtim. They weren't around anymore, okay? This has nothing to do with those pagan, non-Semitic people. They came from the line of, not of Shem, of Noah's son Shemite, but came from the line of Ham. So they're not Semites even by their own definition. So we're not talking about the Arabs who claim that they're Semites. So I don't want to connect the two. So what happened was the following. In 70 AD, you know, the temple, Romans destroyed the temple, and they ransacked an area which was known as Judea. Now, when you're ransacking an area called Judea, and you want to say that the Jews have no rights to Judea, that's a little difficult. Let me say that slowly. The Jews have no right to Judea? It sounds almost ludicrous. So what they did, what the Romans did, was they changed the name from Judea to Capitolina Palestina. Right. Okay, and they coined that name Palestina.
That was Hadrian, Emperor Hadrian.
The name itself, and again, this is so important to understand, the change in the name from Judea to Palestine was an attempt by the Romans to delete and strip the Jews of their religious, national, and historic right to the land of Israel and Judea. It was an attempt to delete it. Now, that was, again, back in the Roman times. Now, time went on, and Palestine became a geographical area which included from northern Syria all the way down. It was a huge geographical area. And it was never a Arab, you know, entity or an Arab country or even an Arab, you know, empire. The Ottoman Empire was the Ottoman Empire. There was no Palestinian Empire. There was no such thing.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simento from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simento, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Now, I'm going to fast forward because from the Romans till 1964, it just wasn't anything Arab. Now, after the World War One, okay, after the Ottoman Empire was taken apart, France took over the northern part of what you would say geographical Palestine, which is the Middle East, and Britain, England, took over the southern part, which, you know, Israel, Lebanon, and everything else. Okay, so it was called the British Mandate of Palestine. Okay, but again, not because it was a Palestine country, or Palestine Arab, anyway, it was a geographical area. Hmm. Okay, so we're talking about between 1917, you know, the Balfour Declaration, the British who were governing the area, and League of Nations knew the British were there, basically 1917 signed a Balfour Declaration. And the Balfour Declaration, Lord Balfour, said the Jews have a right for a homeland in Palestine. Now, in Palestine didn't only mean a little strip of area that we're in today, it included the area of Transjordan. Hmm. Transjordan, for those of you, you got to look at a map, is the other side. Trans is the other side of the Jordan River, right? Which is around 300 times the size of Israel today. Mm. So that whole area was for the Jewish homeland. That was 1917, I think it was. Now, 1922, I'm going to do this fast. I know it's a lot of history.
No, 1922, right.
The Hashemite family, clan. The Arabs are clans. They're not united. They're clans, and they hate each other. The Hashemite clan came in from Mecca and took over the area of Transjordan. Now, there was no Jordan state. There was Jordan, Israel 70, Jordan 72. There was no ancient Jordan state. It didn't exist. Okay, in Hebrew, it's called Ever HaYarden, the other side of the Jordan River, which in the British time, known as Transjordan. Now, they took over 1922, and they started, you know, ruling over the lands, even though they had nothing to do with it. There was no history of them. There was no nationalism or religious right to these Hashemites coming from Mecca, taking over that land. Mm-hmm. That was 1922. Then I think it was 1946. The world said, okay, we're going to create a state of Jordan. It's yours, right? They can occupy it, no problem. And they gave them the right to Jordan. Why? There's no reason for it. Okay. That was in 1946. Now, between that time and 1948, the Declaration of Israel, the British were ruling this area, this mandate of Palestine. And anything before 1948 that was called Palestinian, and this is really key for everybody out there, was Jewish. Now, right. I'm going to name you a couple of things. The Palestine Post is today the Jerusalem Post. It was a Jewish Zionist newspaper. The Palestine Brigade was a Jewish brigade that fought the British against the Nazis. The Muslims in the area were fighting with the Nazis. Okay? The Palestine Company was a Jewish company. The Palestine Philharmonic was a Jewish Philharmonic. The Palestine football team was a Jewish football team that actually played in France in 1939, I think it was, and their flag was the Star of David.
Right.
The Palestine Pound, which the anti-Israel, you know, crowd loved to use to show that Palestine existed, was a British bill minted in Britain for the residents in the British Mandate of Palestine. On that bill, it did say Palestine because it was the British Mandate of Palestine. It says in Hebrew, mind you, land Eretz Israel, land of Israel. Now, if someone out there from any of the Muslim countries or the Arab countries will show me a bill if they would ever print Hebrew on it, we'll talk.
Right.
I mean, really. So, you know, really. And they show coins. Again, these coins were minted for the population. Now, the Arabs actually boycotted this currency because of the mention of the land of Israel. They didn't use it. And they hated the name Palestinian. In other words, it was nothing nationally Arab. In fact, during the Ottoman Empire, there was an Arab revolt. It was called the Arab Revolt, not the Palestinian Revolt. There was no Arab entity ever in the history of the world called Palestinian. There was no Arab country. There was no Arab state. There was no Arab land. It just didn't exist. Now, I've put my whole political ideology and beliefs on this. I've offered money up to $10,000. If anyone out there can show me any time in history when there was an Arab place, land, state, entity, or anything else called Palestinian before 1948, there was one. Only one example was the All-Palestine Government, which was actually an Egyptian puppet little state in the area, which was disbanded by the Egyptians 3 years later. And it wasn't Palestinians, it wasn't Arabs from here, it was Egyptian Arabs. So there was no such thing. 1948, right? The 47th Partition Plan, Resolution 181, which again, the Arabs love to mention, but they forget to mention that they're the ones who refused it. Mm-hmm. The Partition Plan, the world's, the UN, Britain gave the mandate over to the UN. The UN offered a partition plan. It's called Resolution 181, okay? The Jews, just hungry for their land back and hungry to live as we always are, said, okay, we'll take it. It didn't include Jerusalem. It left us most of the desert land, and there was nothing here. The Arabs, not the Palestinians again, there's no mention of them in the Resolution 181. It was given to the Arab League, not to the Palestinians. There was no entity. The resolution said a Jewish country and an Arab country in Palestine. There's no mention of a Palestine country, no mention of Palestinians, nothing. The Jews accepted the resolution. The Arab League said no. We declared a state. The Arabs attacked Israel. Right. 1948, the independence war was won by the Jews. Now, when I say it was won by the Jews, what does that mean? It means we didn't die. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what it means. Doesn't mean we captured land. No, we actually lost land. We actually lost land in 1948. So the geographical map of Israel after the 1948 war looked like the following. Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria, Gaza Strip, and the Golan Heights were all in Arab control. Mm-hmm. Okay? Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria were governed by Jordan. Now, at that time, what Jordan did in Jerusalem, remember, Jordan is 72 years old, and they have no right to their land. They occupied it. Mm-hmm. They put a wall in Jerusalem and said, Jews cannot come to the old city. That is the first time in history there became an East and West Jerusalem.
Right.
In other words, everybody talking about a peace process of East and West Jerusalem, you're actually asking to bring back a situation which is really apartheid or anti-Semitic, any way you want to put it, where it was created by Jordanians, which are a foreign occupying power, who put a wall in Jerusalem, which was never split in 2,000 years, and said Jews can't come to the old city. So I love how people say, well, that's part of the peace. That's part of the peace plan. What? Bringing back an apartheid rule where Jews can't go to the old city? It's like totally ludicrous. So again, now the Arabs in those 18 years, 48 to 67, 18 years, the Arabs had control over everything that they're demanding today for the sake of peace. Okay? In 1964, remember, that's 3 years before the Six-Day War, 3 years before the word settlement ever existed. The PLO organization was born. The PLO organization, Palestine Liberation Organization, was started by Yasser Arafat, who is not even Palestinian by their own lies. He was born in Egypt. So again, I'm not, you're right. So we have Jewish leaders who were born, that's true. But the point is, this new identity in 1964 is not even by someone who was born here. So he created this organization whose first clause in their charter says the Palestinians are part of the greater Arab people. In other words, even they know they're not really a people. Mm-hmm. It's their own charter. The second clause calls for the destruction of Israel. So I ask all of you out there, okay, if the settlements and the West Bank, which we're going to get to that word in 1 second, why it's a horrible word, it's the reason that there's no peace, then what was the excuse in 1964 where the Arabs had control over all the areas that they're demanding today? Everything. What was the excuse to develop a terrorist organization with the goal of destroying Israel if Israel was not in charge of Judea, not Samaria, not Jerusalem, not Gaza, not the Golan Heights? There were no settlements. There was no anything. What was the reason then? So it's completely ludicrous. That was the first Arab-Palestinian national body created in the history of the world was 1964. Okay, now I'm going to add one more thing and I'm going to stop because I can go on for hours about this, but I don't want to take too much time, your listeners. In 1948, when the war was over, remember, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, Gaza, and the Golan Heights were all in Arab control, okay? And when the Arabs decided, okay, we cannot beat Israel in 1948, right? Israel won the war. They stopped fighting. When they stopped fighting, there was an armistice line. An armistice line is a ceasefire line. It's not a border. It was never meant to be a border. It's an armistice line, okay? The green line is not a line from 1967. The green line is the armistice line in 1948 with Syria, Egypt, and Jordan. It has nothing to do with these people who call themselves Palestinians. Now, in 1967, when Nasser from Egypt says, I am going to destroy the mistake called Israel, and he kicked out the UN peacekeeping corps at the border, and he brought all his troops up to the border, Israel said, you know what? We're not going to walk like sheep to the slaughterhouse anymore, and we've preempted a strike. Now, before we struck, we called Jordan, and we said to Jordan, King Hussein, remember, King Hussein is not a king. He has no rights in this area. He just took over the land. The world said it's okay. We said, look, and remember, Jordan is ruling Jerusalem at the time. You have to remember what the geography is here. Hmm. Jordan is ruling Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. Jews can't even go in. We called King Hussein. We said to him, look, Egypt's going to get it from us because they're trying to destroy us. We have no bone to pick with you. Stay out of the war. Jordan said, okay, no problem. Well, we destroyed Egypt in a day. We took out all their planes. And then, of course, Jordan, Syria, Iran, and five, six other Arab nations joined the war. Now, Jordan, again, had no reason to attack. There's none, right? And they attacked. In 6 days alone, Israel decimated, destroyed six Arab militaries. Mm. Now, you have to understand, Egypt alone, I believe the numbers are 20 soldiers to one Israeli one. We're talking about six Arab nations. And in 6 days alone, like 6 days of creation, with all due respect, we completely destroyed six Arab militaries. Now, what happened was we liberated Jerusalem, which means now there's freedom of Jews to go to the old city. Well, almost. We still keep the Temple Mount off for Jews, not we, the government. The Israeli military liberated Jerusalem. Moshe Dayan was one of the generals who was a very, very secular, anti-religious, left-wing. Well, he's dead. You know, we don't make fun of people when they're dead, but snowflake. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there was a big war hero, had these insane fantasy ideas of, you know, making peace with those who want to kill us. So what he actually did, according to the stories and witness, he ran over the border and chased the Arabs back into Jerusalem, convincing them we want to live in peace. I could explain it on a biblical level if you'd like to hear it. Because this is a mistake that we made many times before. We made it first in the desert when God said, go up and conquer the land. You need to conquer. Go up and inherit the land of Israel. Go up and inherit. We did not have to fight a war. God said, go up and inherit the land. There was no war that needed to be fought. And instead of Israel going up and inheriting the land, we said, oh, we can't do it. You understand? And therefore, they sent spies out. And the whole story about our suffering for years came from that. And then during the Second Temple, when there was a declaration of Koresh, he declared the Jews can go back. Most of the Jews did not come back.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David Ha'ivri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
Right? So this is a mistake we go over and over again. And here in 67, God gave us literally the Temple Mount. I mean, I'm not exaggerating here when I tell you we could have built the third temple. Yeah. According to Judaism, I'm not talking about some Zionist Judaism. We could have built the third temple.
It was there. It was right. Waiting for us. We'd taken it. We could have done it.
Absolutely. And what basically happened was, unfortunately, once again, we gave our leader, one guy, the right to knock out that ability. And we gave away our Temple Mount and everything else. Now, I just show you how crazy this is. The Lion's Gate in Jerusalem, the gate where we liberated Jerusalem from, where the Arabs, a lot of them ran, you know, they were terrified of the soldiers, terrified of Israelis. Mm. They could not believe the victory that we had. It just didn't make any sense. Mm. Today, the Lion's Gate is a gate that most Jews will not go through out of danger.
Yeah.
So you understand the effect of that. Now, what happened? So we won this land. We liberated this land. The 1948 Green Line has now disappeared, right? The armistice line doesn't exist because Israel liberated the areas. Mm-hmm. Now, who did we liberate the areas from? Was it the Palestinians? No.
Palestinians didn't exist. We were attacked by Egypt, Jordan, Syria. Is that fair?
There you go. The green line is from them. It has nothing to do with the Palestinians. Now, what's the West Bank? Everybody loves using that word, the West Bank. What's the West Bank? The West Bank is the West Bank of the Jordan River. What's west of the Jordan River? What's the name of that state that exists on the west of the Jordan River? It's called Israel. Hebron is nowhere near the West Bank of the Jordan River. Jerusalem is nowhere near the West Bank of the Jordan River.
Right.
Nablus, these places are nowhere near the Jordan River. They say the West Bank, they're talking about Israel. What does Jerusalem have to do with the Jordan River? There's nothing, no connection. So they use this language to put everything into one category, and we unfortunately accept it. There is no justified Palestinian claim to the Green Line. It has nothing to do with them. Zero. Zero. So that when I say to people, and I'll sum up, when I say to people that this whole Palestinian narrative is fake, it just doesn't have a basis. To which people usually respond to me, okay, but we have a problem today. No, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't. I say to people, don't base your opinion on some fabricated national historic claim. And when I prove that claim false, say, well, we have a problem now. That's ridiculous. That's dishonest. The problem exists not because of your false narrative. The Arabs are living out the result of their own belligerence towards Israel. In other words, the Israeli Arabs, the Druze, the Christians in Israel, they have a beautiful life. Muslims in Israel are the highest educated Muslims in most of the Middle East. So the Arabs in Gaza, okay, if they're suffering, they're suffering because of their own idiocy of voting in a radical, genocidal, terrorist Muslim organization to govern them. It's not because of Israel. So, now the refugees, and I'm going to finish off with this, you could continue. The refugee problem. UNRWA, refugees. UNRWA is the Palestinian refugee organization. It's the only refugee situation that has their own organization. And they are the wealthiest organization in the world.
Yeah.
Africans are starving. Refugee camps in Israel, and anybody who comes to Israel, I'll be happy to take you through a tour. Every house, they have a satellite dish on top. They have stores inside the refugee, quote-unquote, refugee camps. They drive in cars. They're not starving. It's just ridiculous. Now, who created the refugee problem? The refugee camps. Israel never built a refugee camp in the history of the world, ever. In 1948, when Jordan took over Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and Egypt took over the Gaza Strip, and Syria took over the Golan Heights, okay? So what they did was they took local Arabs and shoved them in these. They built the camps, not us. And now it's their own brothers, right? Their own brothers and sisters. Israel got refugees from Europe in the Holocaust, and we gave them a hug and took them in. They took their brothers and threw them in camps. Why they do this? Because their hatred towards Israel is more important to them than the care for their own brothers. So they developed a refugee problem so you can point a finger at Israel. It's absolutely cruel. That's why I said if people say they're left and they're human rights, they care about human rights like I care about the price of tea in China. They just don't care about human rights. What happened was, for instance, the Iraqi leader at the time of the 1948 war, okay? Remember, Arabs were attacking Israel, not the other way around. Before they attacked Iraq, the leader of Iraq sent a message to the Arabs, the local Arabs, said, leave your homes. We're going to come in and destroy all of Israel. And by the way, this is not me. This is on record. You can read the quotes. We're going to destroy this small Jewish state, and then you can have all the land back. So a lot of people left, Lebanon and Syria and their Arab neighbors, thinking, and they put them in these little camps for what they thought, I guess, maybe they thought it would be like a couple of days because, they'll destroy Israel in 2 days. How could they not win a war against refugees coming from the Holocaust and the Sephardi Jews coming in from Arab lands who are farmers? We're going to destroy them in a second, our mighty Muslim and Arab strength. So they figured it might be a couple of days. So they put them in these camps wherever they were, and Israel won the war. So those camps, instead of Lebanon saying, okay, the Jews won. You are our brothers. Come be citizens of Lebanon. No, no, no. They didn't do that. He said, nope, stay in the camps. So the camps now still exist in Lebanon and Egypt. Same thing. Jordan is even the more ironic situation. Remember, Transjordan. Remember what I said about Transjordan? Transjordan was part of geographical Palestine. So technically, the state of Jordan sits on approximately 73% of what was geographical Palestine. This is very important to what I'm about to tell you. It's going to blow your mind. The state of Jordan, the new state of Jordan, the 72-year-old state of Jordan, sits on 73% of the land that was geographical Palestine. The population in Jordan is around 75 to 76% of Arabs who define themselves as Palestinians. So which means if this was really about building a state called Palestine and they want their historic Palestine back, well, why aren't they fighting the Jordanians, who are completely a foreign occupying power, over 75% of the land of Palestine, where they're already a majority, instead of fighting Israel, which is a tiny sliver where they're a minority.
So now listen, you mentioned four points that you go over, and I suspect that we probably just covered them all. Is that right?
I'll say them very quickly. Number one, there was never an Arab entity, country, land, state, or anything else called Palestine pre-Israel. Okay, the occupation simply did not happen in terms of Palestine. And again, they like mixing up. You're occupying people, you're not occupying land. They love switching between those things. No, the claim, the international claim, is that we occupied land, and that simply did not happen. Okay, Jerusalem was never in the history of the world an Arab capital city. Their demand to make Jerusalem an Arab capital city is a complete and total excuse and fabrication. I will pay anyone $10,000 and raise a Palestinian flag on my house if you can give me the year when Jerusalem was ever an Arab, forget Palestine, an Arab capital. Forget Palestine. Never existed. Okay? Four, Jerusalem was never even a holy Muslim city. Mm-hmm. Again, I know this is, what? How could you say that? Let me say it again. Jerusalem was never a holy Muslim city. You want my proof? One, it's not mentioned in the Quran. Two, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which, you know, they say is now on the Temple Mount, did not exist in the time of Muhammad. In the time of Muhammad, there were no Muslims in Israel or in Jerusalem at all. In the times of Muhammad, in the Quran itself, it talks about two mosques that were in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. One was the mosque that was near Muhammad, and one was the farthest away from him. Mm-hmm. The Al-Aqsa means the farthest place. That's what it means. It does not mean Jerusalem. So the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the time of Muhammad was in Saudi Arabia. The truth of the matter is, after like 100 years after Muhammad died, so there was a little friction within the Muslim world, you know, leadership. Now, they originally faced Jerusalem because you have to remember, you really have to remember this. After the Jews built the temple in Jerusalem, whatnot, then after the Romans took over and Christianity became, so Christianity also faced Jerusalem. Remember, the first Christians came out of Judaism, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus was Jewish, right? So they also looked at the temple as a holy place. There was no new place in Jesus' time to worship, okay? So when the Muslims began in the 7th century, the only really holy place in the Middle East was Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. So they faced Jerusalem originally. Then came, I remember his name now by heart. He built this Al-Aqsa Mosque on the corner of the Temple Mount, not in the middle. The Gold Dome is not the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Gold Dome is something else. I'll explain in a second. They built a mosque on the right corner side of the Temple Mount, okay? And what happened was there was friction, political friction within Islam. So what they did was they turned their backs in Jerusalem and now started facing Mecca. They didn't want to give that guy power who built the mosque in Jerusalem. Now, can you for those listening, this is really, if you're not sitting down and you're drinking some hot coffee, please put it down right now, okay? The name of the mosque in Jerusalem when they first built it was called Beit al-Mukdas in Arabic. For those of you who know Hebrew, that says Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash in Hebrew and English means
House of
the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. The Arabs called it Beit al-Mukdas because there was no argument that it was built on the Temple Mount. And when they built the Al-Aqsa Mosque, it wasn't even so much against the Jews. It was just built on a holy place. And then 100 years later, they built the Gold Dome. It has nothing to do with the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Right?
So, and the only thing that was ever holy in Jerusalem to the Muslims was the mosque itself. That's it. Hmm. The whole idea of Muhammad taking a dream with his donkey up this and that, way later, his journey never was in Jerusalem. It was in Al-Aqsa. It was the other mosque in Saudi Arabia. The tradition of Jerusalem came after he died. It's not in the Quran even. The whole thing is fabrication. Now, I respect anyone's religion, and again, whatever one believes is there, but you cannot claim rights on stuff that's mine, okay? Not even based on your religion, based on lies that you told after your religion was created. That's just not going to work for me, you know what I'm saying? If things are immoral, they have to be fixed. Right now, the situation on the Temple Mount is an unethical, immoral situation, right. And it has to be fixed, and until we do, there's no question in my mind that we're going to keep paying, unfortunately, the price for that. But I went up there once in my life, and I was crying. I have a video of it. You know, someone took a video of it. Tears are coming down. Hmm. But the tears were not coming down because, you know, the Assyrians are destroying us or because the Nazis are destroying us or because the Romans are tears are coming down because we're doing this to ourselves. Hmm. And I kept on saying to myself, you know, how much longer? You know, when are we going to stand up for ourselves? We're not in the ghetto anymore.
No, that's
why
right.
Why are we so scared to stand up for ourselves, to stand up for what's right and truthful? That makes me more frustrated and scared, you know, sad than anything else.
You've been listening to a program from last January between myself, John O'Vandor, and hero of Israel, Ari Fuld. Devastating that he is no longer with us. And may his family be comforted. May his memory be a blessing. He'll be dearly missed by all of us. He truly was a giant. Again, this is John O'Vandor for Israel on My Mind on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.